I was starting to question, was it me or the donor, or what was happening? Like, was it the sperm not good, or was it my eggs that's not good quality? And
we're
then,
lesbians, of course we blame the donor first. Yeah. It was his sperm.
It was the doodle.
He was the issue.
It was the dirty doodle.
Queers, queens, and in-betweens, hello and welcome back to Same Sex, Same Shit. I'm Rochelle, and some weeks I'm joined by my incredible fiancé, Maddie, and other weeks I'm joined by powerhouse queer guests. Now, we love to chat all things lesbian, and each week we're going to be sharing that us queers do the same shit as everyone else, but better. And Maddie's here today. Maddie, hello.
Hey, what's going on?
How are you feeling?
I feel good. I feel good today. I've been zipping around the house, putting loads of washing on. I can't complain.
Good. And how's the bump growing?
It's growing big. I think even my vagina's growing at this rate. Everything's getting big at the moment. I'm not sure if it's the twisties or the pregnancy.
or a combination of both.
Or my knickers are just getting like stretched and saggy for some reason. They just need new ones. I don't know what's happening, but everything doesn't fit anymore.
Well, after this, maybe go and treat yourself to some new knickers. Make yourself
honestly
feel good.
Knickers are expensive though, so I hate buying them.
It's like when you spend whatever amount of money on something trivial, but then like pillows and a good mattress, knickers, like stuff that you use every single day, you're like, oh no, I do not want to spend money on that. That's way too expensive.
Yeah, which is crazy because I just spend a whole day today readjusting my knickers because they're going from side to side at the front and the back.
Well, lucky Mother's Day is approaching and you happen to be a mother, so maybe I'll have to get you some knickers.
That is a real Mother's Day gift too. Like,
it's like when your dad asks for socks and undies for Father's Day.
Is that how old I am now? I'm getting knickers for Mother's Day.
You're in your 30s.
Just some knickers, thanks.
Well, today we're talking about sperm. Woo! Fucking who?
Cute.
But before we get into the episode, I want to start either a fact or a recommendation. I want to share some stuff with our listeners, whether that be something that we're currently loving that we recommend or a fun fact that we've heard that we want to enlighten everyone else's brains with. So do you have a fact that you want to share today?
Random, but apparently, look, my facts, I don't know whether I dream them or I actually have been told them. So maybe do your research before you believe any of my facts. But rumor has it flies spew every time they land. So swat your flies if they're in your house because they're spewing all over the place. It's yuck, yeah?
It's fucked up.
Yeah, swat them.
They're dirty ass little things.
Yeah, look, they're probably cute. They're cute as, but if they didn't lay maggots and vomit when they landed, they wouldn't be too bad.
Mac is so in tune with animals and how the world works now. She's getting bigger and older and smarter. There was a dead bug in the shower the other day and she was crouched down, squinting at it, going, "Hey, bug." And I said, "Oh, the bug's sleeping, sweetheart. You just have to leave it." And she goes, "Shh, shh, shh, good night." I was like, oh my God. So anytime I kill an animal, I have to tell her that it's just having a nice rest.
A nice rest forever.
It will never wake up from its nap.
Surely not being the one that has to explain to it when she realizes it's not actually sleeping and it's actually dead. And I don't want to be that one that has to tell her the truth.
Oh, it's a cruel world out there sometimes, so she'll just have to harden up. I have a recommendation, and it's probably just a recommendation for myself, but if you need a reminder, then here it is. Eat more fucking protein. I have been harping on for Maddie's sick of me. I've been harping on for like the last week or so that I need to eat more protein because I realized I eat jack all protein, maybe 10 grams a day. I think I'm meant to be getting like 100 grams a day.
I think it's like 1 gram per kilogram of body weight.
Anyway, this is my reminder to everyone. Eat more protein. I'm putting in effort to eat more protein, so –
Everyone else should, apparently.
Everyone else should. It's good. The building blocks for your body.
It's been a real struggle at home. If I enjoy, like, say, some hot chippies or something, and Rochelle has some, then she goes on this rampage of, like, oh, I don't eat wholesome enough. And, like, it just really ruins my enjoyment of naughty foods these days, because she's like, oh, I need more nuts and seeds and legumes. And she's, like, valid points. But it also destroys my...
Fucking forgive me for trying to be healthy and stick around for our kids.
I appreciate it, but just let this woman enjoy her hot chippies for once.
I'm not telling you not to.
There's potatoes in there. Eat your fucking
twisties.
Anyway.
Didn't you find out the other day that Pringles were in trouble for marketing as potato chips, but they're not actually potato, but then you realize they were potato?
Oh, they see these facts. Don't trust me. Don't believe me. Look up the fly vomit. Look up the Pringles, because apparently Pringles were called Pringle chips, but they had to rename it because... to be able to call something a chip, it has to have potato in it. But apparently it didn't. Right. But I was telling my mum this fun fact the other night, and I Googled it to prove my point, but it actually has potato in it. So now I'm confused. So, again, my facts might be not facts.
All right, we'll get into the episode. So today we're talking all about sperm. The feminist in me still feels annoyed that we have to talk about males, but we need to recognize that they are a valid, real contribution to how lesbians make families. And for some reason, the topic of sperm donation and donors is very big in the lesbian, like, IVF community. I think it's a very, like, obviously it's you're creating your child, so it's a very big aspect of it, but there is also still so much unknown about it. So, Maddie, how the hell do you even choose a sperm donor? Is it online? Do you go and find someone on the street? Multiple places to look?
I guess all the above. It depends what you want as a couple or as a parent, that you just pick whatever's best for you, whether that's online or a known donor or, whatever your clinic that you're going through offers you.
So we'll chat through step by step what our process was for choosing our donor, and then we have a whole heap of questions that we're going to answer for you guys. And then on top of that, I actually have a story / advice that one of the listeners has sent in. Their story is equally frustrating and sad, and I'm sure a lot of lesbian couples will be able to resonate with it, and I hope that someone out there is able to understand or resonate or empathize with this story and might have some advice or assistance for this listener. I haven't shared it with Maddie either, so it's a little surprise for you at the end too. But our process with sperm donation, so we went through an anonymous donor through the fertility clinic. We did have some kind of like dabbling with a couple of known donors. And when I say dabbling, as in like just in the talking phase.
We weren't getting in the sheets with him.
We were not dabbling in that way. But we did speak to a few people that we know about being known donors, and they kind of approached us about it. It wasn't, you know, something that we went and put on upon someone. But anyway, for particular reasons, that wasn't the path that we wanted to take. And so we went with an anonymous donor, through the fertility clinic. So after the initial fertility specialist consultation, we then had a counseling session. So once you get all the formalities out of the way, this is how you want to do it, whether it's IUI, IVF, reciprocal IVF, and then our counseling session. The minute that we finished our counseling session, we paid a fee, a couple $100, and we had access to the donor registry. What was that experience like with the donor registry?
It was a mix of emotions. We were both obviously really, really excited to find a match for our family and move forward in our decisions and what we wanted to do. The things that we found challenging, though, however, in that process was you get photos of the donor when they're at a young age. Well, ours, that's what we got provided with. And to wrap your head around looking at a young boy and picking that as your donor, it's a weird concept to wrap your brain around. So I think that makes you take a few steps back, and then it becomes normal over time to look at the pictures and be like, okay, yeah, cool, and get excited about it. But I think initially it took us a few days to wrap your head around kind of that's what it is, and this is how, I don't know, it's a weird experience.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, show me an adult photo maybe, like when he's like our age.
Wouldn't that be nice?
But obviously for privacy reasons they can't do that. Understandably, they're at a young age, and that was one of the challenges. And the other challenge was there's not many to pick from, or we didn't have many to pick from. So we had approximately, was it like 6 or 7?
I think we had 9 donors to choose from. 5 of them were American donors and 4 were Australian donors.
Okay.
So just to preface this, we went through our fertility treatment with Queensland Fertility Group, QFG, in Queensland. And they are affiliated, I believe, with 2 international sperm banks. So they are affiliated with Seattle Sperm Bank and California Cryobank. And so all of these processes are specific to Queensland, or I suppose specific to our specialist and fertility group that we went through. I know that I've heard so many different stories and they're all different, so you definitely have to check. But yeah, for us, we didn't have a wait list to pick a donor. So I know that a lot of people get put on a wait list and they're waiting months and months just to have access to what's called the donor registry. So just keep that in mind, that if you're going through your fertility journey in another state or at a clinic that's not QFG, then once you get access, or once you pay your fee to the donor registry, you might not get access for a little while. So we were really lucky. The second we paid the fee, we got an email to access the registry that day. And yeah, as Mad said, we only had 9 to choose from. We didn't want to go with an Australian donor for a few reasons. We were advised that they didn't have as much medical history, and their protocols and policies are a little less strict when donating. So American donors, their donation system, I suppose, with those fertility clinics over there are very regulated. They go through months and months of vetting and processes. They have a lot of medical history and background checks, and it's a very regimented process. So we really liked that idea that it was very vetted, it was very safe, it was very like clean cut. So out of the 9, that knocked us down to 5 because we wanted to go with an American donor. And I think some people even have less than that to choose from. So that was a big shock for us. We expected to, you know, have a cup of coffee, sit down, be like flicking through pages and pages of donors, right?
Yeah.
And then we were like, it's 1 page. There's 9. We're like, this is going to take 2 seconds. So Mads and I said, all right, we'll both look at it separately. In our own heads, choose who we kind of resonate with, who we like, and then we'll come back together and we'll say, this is our top donor. And we were very fortunate that we both wanted and picked the same donor after we congregated and came back together.
Which was nice. It was an obvious standout for both of us. Like, we both said we wanted a donor that had olive skin, brown eyes, just the similar, like, what Rochelle and I share in feature-wise, we wanted to have in the donor as well. So increased chance of obviously having kids that look like us, and I don't know, just increased chances so we didn't get like a curly-haired skin, blue-eyed, like just to decrease the chances of a mix that just, I don't know, we just wanted
similar genes to us.
Yeah, that's,
which I think is a very normal thing for other like lesbian couples to want, from what we've heard, and it's so fair and fine if that's what you want. And if you want someone that looks completely different to you guys, also completely fine. And I guess that's one of the perks that
we could have still had a blue-eyed baby. You got blue eyes on your side and I've got blue eyes on mine. So
that's true.
Either way, yeah, it was just personal preference. But if that donor wasn't on the page, I'm mortified to think of how long it might have taken us to see someone, because the other 8 were a definite no's. Like, it wasn't even
a maybe.
Yeah, it wasn't even, oh, but maybe this. It was like, nope. It was a full stop. And obviously we wanted to be strict with who we picked. And we wanted to be confident and excited about it, not be like compromising in our decision. So, yeah, we were incredibly fortunate to have our donor in the mix there that ticked the box and was donated and had vials for us to purchase.
On that note, because I do, I have heard of IVF journeys all across the nation. So I do just want to highlight a few points. We picked one donor. So the clinic that we went through, we picked one donor and we called up and we said, this is the donor we want, but we're not 100% sure, because we were like, but what if someone else comes up? Or because we were so naive in this process. And I would assume that people listening to this episode are wanting to know about donor sperm, and then that they haven't gone through the process either, or just want to hear our process. But we were like, well, maybe we'll sit on it for a few days. And the lady on the phone from the fertility clinic said to us, if you don't make this decision now, I can pretty much guarantee you it won't be available tomorrow.
Which was stressful as shit.
They go so quickly. So that's another thing to keep in mind. Not to put pressure, not to make the wrong decision. You do what's best for you guys and your family. But just be aware that, yes, they do get snapped up very quickly. Because, as we just said, there's not a lot of donors. There's a lot of us gays out there that want to have babies. So just something to keep in mind. And we were very lucky, yes. But then stressful. Maddie and I were like, can we give you a call back in like half an hour? And she's like, well, great.
Yeah. So
if you want to risk it.
I think that half an hour turned to 3 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. We were like, fuck it. We'll just have to do it. Like, you know, this is the only one. And we, you know, everything about him we like and we resonate with. And we both picked this one. And there's not a doubt in our mind. So why not? And then another point to highlight is I do know that other clinics make you choose your top 3 or 5 donors. So they'll say, okay, give us your top 3. And then on the day of your IUI or your egg retrieval, you will find out which one of those 3 donors you've been allocated.
We only found this out last week, was it? And mm-hmm. I was gobsmacked at how different the process can be. And mm-hmm. you're like, oh, which one was it out of the couple that we picked? And I was blown away how different a process can be just going by what clinic or whatever you go through. So there's definitely a massive range and a different process for each and every one of the clinics, I guess, in a way. So that's something to be mindful of also. So
very fortunate, again, that we were able to do that. But just be aware that some clinics may say to you, yep, you have to pick your top 3 or your top 5. And that obviously makes the decision even harder again, because as Maddie just said before, we didn't have 3 or 5 that we wanted. We have one and we wanted to pick him. And if it wasn't him, then out of that 9 that we had available to us on that day to choose from, it was none of them other ones.
Yeah. And if they made us pick 3 of them, I would have said we won't pick any until another
2 that we won't come
until
up.
Until some more donors.
And we would still not have a baby. So
yeah, probably.
That was our initial picking process. So on top of that, after we said yes, we want to reserve this donor, the fertility clinic that we went through, you could only reserve a maximum of 2 vials of sperm per donor. Side note, because we're 2 women and we are together, going through a pregnancy journey together, we found this hack out off a friend. So just make sure that you're aware of it when you're going through picking your donor. We're classed as 2 women, even though we're a family, but we made a note to say we both potentially want to fall pregnant. So then that made us essentially like
2 families,
like 2 individual people in the IVF process, but as a family. So we were then able to get 2 vials each under our family name. So we were able to reserve a maximum of 4. Nobody from the fertility clinic told us this. We just had to find this out of friends. So we're telling you, make sure your clinic knows that if both you and your partner are considering carrying, at this point, I had no desire to carry. We were a bit fibby. But I mean, I was potentially, the plan was to always down the track may potentially carry. So just make sure they're aware we're both looking at carrying. So then you potentially have access to more vials of sperm to reserve.
With saying that, because the donor can be up to, we're in our, through our clinic, the donor can donate up to 10 different families, correct? Are we classified as 1 family or 2 now?
We're 2. So I researched this before the podcast. QFG, the donor can donate to up to 10 women.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is good, because obviously, bless his genes, we think they're beautiful, but
nobody else can have them. No, I'm kidding.
No, but to the less number of families it goes to, it works more in our favor. So the fact that we take up 2 spots instead of 1,
mm-hmm.
that's a positive for us.
Yes, Absolutely. So we chose 4 vials, and then every time we used a vial, we went back and we bought another vial, because for some reason we were paranoid about, you know, like the donor not donating anymore. And a big non-negotiable for us is, as a family, the decision we made was that we wanted the same donor for all of our kids. You know, that was best case scenario for us. We wanted to do everything in our power to make sure that was our family situation. And that meant buying lots of sperm.
Oh yeah, well, buying sperm left, right. But because we do have some friends that actually stopped their fertility journey because they ran out of vials and their donor stopped donating. And that, I think that triggered us to be like, okay, fuck, we need to get as many vials as we can. I don't care how much it costs, because the family for us is priceless. So how much sperm's like up to $1,700 now, a vial?
We paid in 2021.
I don't know if I want to hear these numbers, but
yes. $1,700. $1,700 for one single vial of sperm. I'm pretty sure that's a single wank. Per vial of sperm, okay, right? And so then we bought 4 in one go. Since then, we've bought like a couple more. It has now gone up to $1,850 per vial. Straight girls, next time you're having sex with your husband, fucking be grateful that that liquid gold is $2,000 almost per ejaculation. So it's wild. It blows my mind. I have been, for the last 3 years, disgusted on the amount of money that we've spent on sperm. So just be aware, again, if you're going through your IVF process, it is expensive. And on top of that, the cost is unregulated. So just because we got charged $1,700, $1,800, some clinics are charging $2,000 per vial, or, you know, maybe less, which would be so ideal. But yeah, just be aware that that is the rough average cost in Australia for one vial of sperm. You don't get any back on Medicare. She's not bulk billed. It's just the way that it is.
You just got to rub your earlobes and be like, this is priceless. This is priceless. Because it is. I'll pay. I don't know. I would pay everything to keep Mackie's in my arms. So it's I think it's a small price. It's a big price, but technically a small price to pay for what you get in the end. So
yeah,
you just got to think of the bigger picture, and that helps not put salt in your bank.
Yeah. And we'll talk about, you know, the ins and outs of the IVF process down the track, but that is another little factor as to why we didn't do too many IUIs with our second pregnancy. We only did one IUI, like trying for this second bub, because we were like, okay, well, there's $2,000. And we just didn't want to keep trying that. One, because our donor had actually stopped donating for now. We're lucky we have reserve vials. But also because of the cost, we didn't want to keep dropping $2,000. And, you know, when you go through IVF, of course, it's a bigger outlay of money. But you then do have the chance of creating more embryos rather than just, you know, so that was a decision that we factored into our IVF journey as well. We're like, okay, we're going to try one IUI. If that doesn't work, then we're moving on to IVF. Yeah.
And like, we've got a friend too that she's did IUI for both her kids and happened first go for both of them. So that is super, super fortunate. Yeah. And I hope everyone has outcomes like that over what we're doing. But it's just one of those things where you just got to weigh up the options. I'm like, okay, donors stop donating. We've got this many vials left. This is how much it costs to do IUI. This is the amount, like, this decreases our chances of how many number of kids that we want. And at the end of the day, like, if you just spent, we just spent that extra lump sum of money, which is always sad to see go. But yeah, if you pay that extra lump sum of money, it worked out better for us in the long run because we have more opportunities and you can reserve your sperm and have your embryos to kind of dabble with, and more money but more chance of a successful outcome as well, because IVF obviously increases your chances of pregnancy higher than if you were to do IUI.
And on the flip side to that, more budget friendly option, and just a comparison for those who don't know much about it, $1,700, $1,800, $2,000 per vial of sperm for an American donor. Australian donors are actually cheaper. Anonymous through the fertility clinic and sperm bank too, but when we were looking at it in 2021, it might be a little bit more now, but it was $500. $500 for an Australian donor. Yes.
Wow.
And I think the biggest thing is importing fees, really.
Yeah, you got to import it, then you got to freeze it, and you pay those annual freezing fees as well, which are a few hundred dollars.
Oh, yeah, the fees don't stop there, bitches. $250 every 6 months to freeze that sperm too. Not per vial, thank God, just like as a storage fee as whole. So if you've got four vials, you're not paying $250 per. With our clinic, you're just paying, I think that's pretty common, like you just, it's just one storage free yeah. fee under your family. So there's that.
Also, I know you're pro-fem and stuff, but also for the males that go through this, I just had this little light bulb moment.
Please enlighten me.
I need
me.
To let it off my chest before I forget it.
Enlighten me.
I am so happy that there's men out there that are willing to do that though too, because if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be able to have a family.
Oh my God, of course, yeah. Like, so like I said at the start, like they're a very valuable part, an integral part of our family journey, and I will forever be thankful for that. But like,
I would honestly have lunch with our donor. I'd be like, come over, have lunch. I will give you a hug to say thanks and bake you my favorite dish. You'll be a bit iffy on that. Rochelle's not too keen on knowing what he looks like in his day and age. As I'm curious, but I'm not going to be sourcing out what he looks like unless Rochelle's on board with that one. But anyways, big thanks to the humans out there that donate their embryos, their eggs, their sperm, their anything, because families like us really get to succeed in life, and it's literally, like I said, priceless. So anyways, that was my shout out. Carry on. What were you talking about?
Shout out to the donor. Another little highlighting point. If you're driving, put it in your brain. If you're not driving, take out a pen and paper with all these things that I'm jotting down. If you go through an international sperm bank, specifically the two that I'm aware of, California Cryobank and Seattle Sperm Bank, once you pick your donor and it's locked in and you've reserved your vials and they're your donor, you can reach out to the International Sperm Bank directly. Pretty sure their contact emails are just online, and ask them if they have any more information on your donor.
Again, this was only, we only found this out through word of mouth of friends that have been through this same clinic as us as well. So
we don't know why. What gets lost in translation, or why they choose to send 3/4 of the information over and not all of it to the Australian fertility clinics. I'm not well versed in that side of things, but we just reached out. We said, hey, this is our donor ID, our names, all the information about us. We're through this clinic, yada, yada, yada. Do you have any other information on donor XYZ? And they said, literally that next day, time differences and whatnot, they emailed back saying, here's another photo, here's a handwritten note from him, here's a staff impression from our clinic on, you know, what we think about him. And some people have gotten voice memos. And yeah. I can confirm, as recently as a few weeks ago, we told some friends to do this and it was successful. So it's still a valid thing. There's more information out there, potentially.
Yeah, and that was a game changer for us, because the one photo that we had of our donor, two more photos came through.
Yeah, I lied. Two more photos.
Two more photos came through. And he was years older than what the original photo was. And I was gobsmacked. I'm like, holy shit, he looks so different and he's so much older. And it looks like, it was literally like, we were stoked with how he was growing up to be as well, because we still were so, so happy with what we saw. And that is huge. That's a huge thing to casually send us. I'm like, why is that so casual?
Yeah, so the first photo that we had, which we'd had for 6 months or something, that's all until we found out about this little hack. He was 3-ish, I would say, 2, 3. And the next one, the next two, 5 and 7, I would say. So like significantly older, you know, starting to form proper features and like morphing into what they're kind of going to, more so going to look like, and their hair color might change. And yeah, really cool.
And even the staff impressions, they kind of described a little bit of like present features, like about his jawline, and like made little comments about his nature as well, which made us feel, I felt really happy getting that kind of information, because it was like, that's present time, that's what they saw and that's how they feel. And it made a description in a way where I had like this visual kind of thing that was calming in a way. Yeah. So it was nice.
Yeah, because they've obviously met them as adult men. And so they wrote, that he was charismatic and, yeah, just their impression of him. So really cool. Reach out and see if there's any other information out there, and you never know what you might get. So we have some questions, a lot of questions. We have answered a fair few of them, so we won't go through all of them. Are we using the same donor? Yes. For now, as far as we can, that is a non-negotiable for us. We ideally want 3 kids. You're currently pregnant with number 2, Mads. This is the first episode you're listening to. We have a 1.5-year-old daughter. Maddie's currently pregnant with number 2. We have 1 embryo left and two vials of sperm. So far, so good. Yes, we want the same donor for all of the kids.
Just to cap it, we're not trying to have like 7 kids either, everybody. I think we're going to cap it at 3.
Yes, so. We're definitely capping it at 3. My bank account cannot afford anymore.
My sanity can't afford anymore.
Is your donor known or anonymous? We went through an anonymous donor, and how much do we know about them? So roughly we got 15, maybe 20 pages with the extra information on the donor. Now that is everything from the standard hair color, eye color, height, weight, blood type, ethnicity, occupation, age, personality, education. We got a criminal background check. We got a 4-generation family health history, which I really liked. It was honestly so in-depth. It had every medical condition you could ever think of listed. And it would say, you know, the donor's great-grandmother died at 92 of Alzheimer's, but she was only diagnosed at 89. Like very specific stuff.
Yeah.
Which was really cool. They had a physical examination checkup every 6 months on the history, and a chemistry panel, a blood work panel. That's all infectious diseases. That's blood types. That's full blood count. All of that kind of stuff. Sperm quality. So
we knew lots. A little narrative too from the donor saying like why he is donating as well. So it's kind of just a bit of a personal thing too to read.
Yep. Yeah, so lots and lots of information. I don't think there's anything that we would want to know that we didn't find out.
Again, this process is huge for the donors, so another thanks there.
Australian versus American donors, what did we choose? As we said, we obviously chose an American donor. We feel that they're vetted a little bit better and their process is a lot stricter. I think you do get a lot less information on Australian, and just from our experience, we found that all 4 of our Australian-based donors were actually other ethnicities. None of them were like Australian ethnicity, which no. I found that I didn't expect that either.
No, I didn't either.
Someone said Queensland seemed to have access to a broader range of international donors, and do we know why? I don't know why, but I do know that a lot of the Queensland fertility clinics are directly associated with the big sperm banks over in America. So that might be why, just the affiliation with like the big sperm banks in California and Seattle and over there.
I'm not sure if you can answer this, but do Australian or Americans get paid as donors?
As far as I'm aware, Australians do not. American donors are compensated. So there's more incentive, I suppose, okay, to donate. How long did it take for us to pick? Again, very fortunate, just the one day. But yes, if that donor wasn't there that we picked, I have no idea how long it could have taken us.
Mortifying at the thought.
Yeah, one to come up. So my heart goes out to anyone who's sitting in that waiting process.
Because that can be years. Because I've seen some people say it's been years, like that they've had to wait to even get access to our list.
Yes, yeah.
This is all information to like these kind of things you can ask before you pick the clinic and set yourself in stone somewhere. You can talk to the clinic and ask them these kind of questions and get some clarification on how the process is and what you're getting yourself in for.
But why would you do that when you can just listen to your favorite lesbians talk about it on their podcast?
Well, it means you have to go to our same one, our same clinic. Go, by all means, go to our clinic if you like our process.
Yes, absolutely. Ask us. We'll find out the answer for you and we'll provide it free here on the podcast. Then you get to listen to our voices.
No good.
How much sperm to buy if you're wanting to have siblings? So, yes, I think it's very important to reiterate. We got the max amount that we could. I know affordability, it's very extravagant, but if that's something that's accessible to you, I definitely think that I would personally buy the max because you can get a refund.
Possibly. Yeah. So if you buy this many and you finish your family and you've got 2-3 vials left, they do say there is potential to get a refund on those ones, given assuming that's because other families might be still going through the process and needing those vials and have ran out themselves. So it's all dependent if any families are still wanting them. I think that's what the case would be.
Maybe that's something to ask your clinic. Fine. Do we know if there are any other confirmed births from your donor, or do you choose not to find out?
So when I was going through the process and we're having a lot of trouble with me falling pregnant and going through the IVF process and I had really poor fertilization. So I had, as I've touched base on earlier in a podcast, I had 25 eggs collected, only one fertilized and made it to an embryo, which ended up in a miscarriage. And then I had the 28 eggs collected and they did the ICSI where they injected it to every single egg and 3 made it, which was a lot bigger number than the number one that we got. But I was starting to question, was it me or the donor, or what was happening? Like, was it the sperm not good, or was it my eggs that's not good quality? And
we're
then,
lesbians, of course we blame the donor first. Yeah. It was his sperm.
It was the doodle.
He was the issue.
It was the dirty doodle. So, so the lab specialist I spoke with personally, because they were a bit thrown by the outcomes for me as well in the process, but they confirmed with me, they said, look, we did some research and there has been actually families that have fallen pregnant through IUI using the same donor. And she's like, there was one in Queensland that did a successful IUI with the donor that you've used, and IVF, good fertilization, IVF they've for another family. So she was touching on a couple. So there's definitely a few out there.
Good, fucking good for them. Yeah. Someone has said they're feeling guilty about using an anonymous donor because my child won't know half of them as they grow up. How have you dealt with that? I don't want them to feel like they're missing out on something.
One, they're not missing out on anything. I think in a nutshell, they're completely not missing out on anything. I think that's a very savage thought to have. Feeding it negative energy to begin with is not the right foot to start on. Ultimately, it doesn't matter how you got your kid. You could adopt a kid. As long as you create a space that is safe, filled with love, there's no reason to have guilt because you did the best you can. You parented, no matter what blood that you share or where they came from or anything like that. It's you were you. You parented them. You created a safe space and you grew them up and you try your best just to teach them life goals and dreams and how to be a good person.
I have a huge avoidance personality, so I like to avoid things and topics and thoughts, concerns for very long times until they build up and explode. And
I take the explosion.
One aspect of our journey that I have neglected to think about is this, feeling guilty about using an anonymous donor. And I have never actually felt guilty about using an anonymous donor, but I have not really thought about, and I know I'm going to have to eventually think about, how that conversation is integrated into our family and how we kind of bring that up with our kids. And I like to think of nature versus nurture. Maddie and I have always said that we will be very open about talking about the donor with our kids when the time comes to it. But I also think Mads brought this up early on and she made a comment that I've never forgotten. You said, I hope that we raise our kids well enough that they don't feel the need to go searching for all that information on their donor. And yes, it's absolutely fine if they want to know about them and that they're curious, because that's human nature. But you said, I hope that we raise them well enough that they love us and we are their family and that's all they know and that's all they see. And yes, they can be curious and they have questions about, you know, where they come from, and that's absolutely fine. But they get that information, they do with it what they will, and they don't really care about it. They're like, sweet, that's another piece of information that I have, but these are my moms and they love me. These are my siblings, this is my family, and this is all I know. Yeah. And I don't need anything else to feel, you know, satisfied.
Yeah, like I said, just parent the best you can, guide them the best way you can, create that safe space, and hopefully that's enough to create a sense of happiness in your children. And another thing is too, like, I think we find a lot of reassurance, like, because obviously it is, like, there's going to be challenges, and we are so, so damn fortunate to have so many same-sex couples that have kids and single mums that have chosen to do it on their own. And we surround ourselves with those people, and you naturally gravitate towards them because you're going to be in the same situation, and our children can grow up with families that are the same as us as well. So I think by providing space, that it is a normal thing, that it is, like, there can be two mums, there can be one mum, there can be one dad, like, you just, it doesn't matter, and they see it as a normal thing. It's not like, oh, there's husband and wife and white picket fence, like, and get that kind of idea out of their head and just be like, love is love, and just as long as you're safe, happy, well fed, you, it all is good.
Yeah, I really try to raise Mac, and as I will with all the kids, to be like, every family is different. There is no normal. A mum and a dad is not normal, and then two mums or a single mum or two dads is abnormal. Every family is completely different. And so I like to say, Maddie will say, Boopy's dad, like Bluey's dad. And I'm like, yeah, Bluey has a mum and Bluey has a dad and Bluey has a little sister. Macklin has a mum and a mummy. Macklin has two mums, and your friend has one mum and no dad. And everyone's family is normal and they're all different. And that's how I suppose I like to think about it. And I think that if everyone can raise their kids to just know that everyone's family is different. Kids are raised by grandparents and they're adopted and they're in foster care and they have mums and dads and non-binary parents. And if we just say that everyone is different, there's nothing that's abnormal, then kids are so spongy and they don't care. They have no judgment. They just think, yeah, cool. You got two mums. That's fine. I don't have a dad. Cool. Kids don't care as much as we do.
No, we overthink things because we've got a lot of storage in our brains, a lot of baggage hanging out up in there.
But I get why you feel guilty.
Yeah.
It's normal.
It's a normal process. Just back yourself and be confident that you're doing the right thing, and it's not a bad thing that you're doing it.
Kids feed off you too. You got to G them up. You're like, yes, eat your broccoli. It's so good. It's delicious. Look, mum and mummy are eating it. And yeah, they'll believe anything usually. To a degree. The final question before we get onto this story is, are we open to meeting donor siblings and their families? And this is a contentious topic in our household that Maddie has chose to leave for now. Very smart of her.
Let me just describe that Rochelle's over in the corner of the room here with her arms folded, and she's looking at me with semi-pouted lips as she's talking. So...
Tread carefully.
Yeah.
No. I make it out to be a big thing. I am not comfortable meeting donor siblings and their families yet. I have absolutely not closed off the idea, but for now, I am so happy with the family that you and I, Mads, have created, our beautiful little girl, our little one on the way, and I am very happy in this bubble right now, and I am not mentally ready to explore the idea of donor siblings, and I know that they're out there, and I'm sure that they are incredible, and really, it could increase our chance of either solo IVF mum or lesbian friends. So I know that they're out there and I know that it would be amazing to connect, but mentally I am absolutely not ready to do that, and I just don't even want to explore that option yet.
And because I'm a fucking great partner, I haven't pushed it. I haven't poked the bear. I've absolutely accepted that's how you feel, and it's not until we're both on board that we'll explore connections.
What do you mean there's donor siblings out there? Didn't you and I have sex one night and create this baby?
Yeah, look, I had too many tequilas, my clothes fell off,
dirty
skizzer.
That's how lesbians make babies. All right, I'm gonna read this story. I think it's incredible, as I said, at the same time frustrating, and I have a lot of feelings about this story from this listener. And if anyone has any advice out there, Mads and I are going to discuss a little bit. So our beautiful listener said, I wanted to throw a question out there. Are any couples struggling with how their family is responding to how we need to grow our families? Mainly how we have two eggs in the relationship and need a sperm donor. My wife and I are growing our family and chose to do IUI to start. My wife is carrying and we chose an unknown donor via a sperm bank. We both come from conservative families and have been very open and vocal about IUI and the process to help normalize it for our families. We started talking about this years ago, so each person had time to process and understand how a family could look for us. My first point, I think it's so incredible how you even began those topics with your families and you were putting their thoughts and feelings before that to give them time to process it. So I think that's really nice of you, and you know, you didn't need to be done. Anyway, we are now early in our pregnancy, about 5 weeks along, and so excited, but we have family members struggling with this concept. We shared the news with my mother-in-law and she was not as excited as we would have hoped. She has asked so many questions about the donor and how IUI works. She asked to see pictures of the donor and is worried the baby will look like the donor, which in my mind, if the baby does look like the donor, that's a great thing. We can be reminded of what a beautiful gift this individual gave to us so we could have a child. Regardless of the answers we give her to many questions, last week she ended the conversation saying, "I just don't know how to be a grandparent to it and how I'm supposed to treat it." She asked for any books that we may have to better explain this, and I'm struggling to understand her side of this. It's her daughter's embryo, and even if it wasn't, her daughter's child. Have others experienced this? Do you have any stories to share, or has family been understanding and accepting of donor kids? My mother-in-law would like us to connect her with other grandparents of donor babies, but this feels unnecessary to me, but I also don't know any other ways to try and have this discussion with her.
Holy smokes.
Yes. So I have a lot of thoughts and feelings, and I just want to start by sharing one piece of advice that I got from my psychologist, which has stuck with me for a very long time, since the day she told me, and I use it in a lot of my adult relationships, particularly parents, you know, because as kids, you can tend to take on the weight of your parents' feelings. You don't want to let them down and you want to make them proud. My psychologist said to me, they're an adult. They have to be in charge of processing their own emotions. It is not your responsibility to protect their emotions. They will work out how they want to deal with it and how they want to process it. That is not your responsibility. So I think that's one thing that when I feel bad about, you know, doing something that my parents might think is wrong or different, unfortunately, as hard as it is to accept, that is their problem. That is not your responsibility to take on. They can figure it out themselves.
It's hard because families can change dynamics dramatically. Like, you gain friends, you lose friends, you create stronger and weaker connections with certain people and family members by having families. And at the end of the day, as hard as it is to have distance between people that you have a lot of love for, it's the people that are genuinely happy for you and want to be there with you that are going to be your people that you lean on. And it's such a hard situation, and it's such a sucky situation to be in that when it is someone so close to you in your family. But like you said, they're an adult. They can deal with it the way they need to deal with it. You can't fix or change their thought patterns. You can help guide them in the direction by what they've already done by saying, this is it. This is the heads up. This is what a family looks like. This is what we're doing. And hopefully you just got to hope that they come around and you know you're a good person and they see that you're a good person and be happy for you when they see that you've got a family gelling together and the love that's there, because actually love makes a family. It's not like you don't have to be full-blooded or anything like that. It's the love that creates that family space, and people need to be happy for that.
I wonder, would your mother-in-law know how to grandparent it, the baby, or treat it, the baby, if her daughter fell pregnant to a random guy on a night and, you know, that also didn't want to have anything to do? Like, what is the actual root issue of the mother-in-law's problem? And does it stem from some homophobia, or does it stem with the actual issue of a donor sperm?
there's a donor that's actively out there helping people and with good intentions. So it's just one of those ones where you just, you got to accept that it's, oh, I don't know, it's hard. This is a hard topic, but you don't want to say the wrong
thing. I was infuriated when I read this, mostly because I feel so awful that these two beautiful girls are having to go through this with their family. And unfortunately, I think that being queer, you do have to make a lot of decisions to protect your own emotions and your own mental health and your own family. And I find a lot of the time that is cutting out toxic friends, cutting out toxic relationships in your life. And unfortunately, that does, I have noticed, mean that you do drift away from family or friends. And it's because they either don't accept your views, they don't understand your views, they don't want to care to get to know it. And that is one of the biggest things for me. I'm like, well, you don't care to even try to understand this or be open to this idea. So that's on you. I think a lot of, you just have to put a lot of the responsibility back on them. Yes, you can absolutely guide them and help them, like it sounds like these girls have been doing. You know, they've been trying to talk to them and share as much as they can with them.
And it sounds like the grandparent is trying to a degree by asking for further information, but still the confusion still lingering no matter what they're doing.
Yeah. And I think time also helps as well. When, you know, Bub does arrive, seeing the baby there and seeing how much you two love the baby and your family as a whole and the love you have for each other, I think actions speak louder than words in any aspect of life. You can tell someone till they're black and blue. Like, wait, is that the saying? You can tell someone till you're black and blue.
I don't know.
That you have to do this or you need to accept me, but you know, you just have to show through your actions.
Yeah. You ultimately just fucking deserve it. Full stop.
Mm.
You deserve it. You deserve to be happy. You deserve the family that you're creating, and people need to be on board, or just give them time and hopefully they come around and you have the best outcome that you are both chasing.
So if anyone has had this experience too and has any advice or assistance on how to navigate it, send it through to us and we will anonymously forward it on to these beautiful girls. They're having trouble navigating this, understandably, and my heart goes out to anyone who's, you know, struggling through families who don't accept or aren't coming to terms with everything. It's not until now. I've been very open. I come from a Catholic Italian background, which also means my family was quite conservative growing up. You know, the Italian side are still quite conservative. And it's not until now, you know, that Mads is starting to feel a little bit more a part of that side of the family.
I got a compliment from your pop, which is fucking first compliment that I've had since being with you. So I took that compliment and I ran with it. It was great. So,
and it's not that there's been any negative comments. There's just been no comments.
No.
It's been a very avoided topic.
I think it's the same as these girls. It's a bit of a confusion and a misunderstanding, or there's just something that they can't piece together because it's not kind of what they had in mind or what their religion kind of follows.
Yes. And I completely understand, lastly, why these girls are struggling to understand their side of it, because I am too. You know, you're kind of like, well, I love this child. I love my partner. This is our family. You know, this is what I said a lot of the time when I was coming out and, you know, family might not have understood me. I was like, I am a good human. I am not doing awful things to this world. I am excelling in my career. I love my friends and family. I look after myself. I'm a good person. Why does my sexuality have to change your view on me and that? And so,
and it's not choice.
And it's not,
it's
choice.
How you feel, girl.
Anyway, we'll wrap it up there. We hope that this was a very informative topic all about sperm, and I hope you enjoyed listening to us talk all about sperm.
Cute.
Sperm, sperm, sperm.
Love it, love it.
All right, we'll chat to you all next week.
Love you, bye.
Thank you all so much for listening today. If you'd like to connect with us and stay up to date with our day-to-day life as well as future episodes, you can do so on our socials at those.2mums. We absolutely love bringing you these conversations each week, so if you love it too, please subscribe and leave us a review. Chat to you all next week. Bye.